America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
This is Dad to the Future, my show about fatherhood, marriage, and time travel. I'm Dennis Freimeyer. Hello, everyone. This is Dennis Freimeyer, and this is Dad to the Future. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in for another episode. This episode is a little bit different from the last couple of ones that we have done so far. In this one, I have a conversation with my friend, Sam Fain. Sam is a new dad. As of the time of this recording, he was just 5 days into fatherhood. So he was a little bit sleep-deprived and a little bit loopy. So I wanted to get him on tape to have this conversation, have like a little time capsule of his early days of fatherhood. I've known Sam for a few years. We met working on a show together a few years ago in Chicago. We're both in the theater community. And we stayed in touch over the years. And a little under a year ago, as of the time of this episode being put out, we have worked together as co-hosts on Fate's Wide Wheel, a Quantum Leap podcast. One of the things that we bonded over early on in knowing each other is our love for the show. So last July of 2017, I floated the idea out to him of doing a podcast just talking about Quantum Leap. And he was game for it, so we've been doing that for about a year. Would love for you to check that out sometime if you are a fan of that show. So without further ado, please enjoy this conversation with Sam, who again, at the time of this recording, was just 5 days into fatherhood. And I do want to apologize in advance. There is a little bit of a sound quality issue on Sam's end. The central air was running in his home, and we're all kind of doing this on the cheap. And when you got a new mom and a new baby in the house, it's all about keeping everyone comfortable. That being said, it's a great conversation, and I hope you enjoy. Hey, new dad.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, it's going all right. So I'll ask you the question everybody asked me when I first became a dad a year and a half ago. How you sleeping?
Different. Yeah, I feel like for the first 2 days, I didn't really sleep at all. And my daughter was born at 6:14 p.m. And so that night, I definitely didn't sleep. To the point where it was like midnight, and I didn't even realize it was midnight. And then it was 3, and I didn't even really realize it was 3. And when I woke up, because I mean, I kind of laid down, but I didn't really sleep. So when I decided to finally roll off of the most uncomfortable sleeping instrument known to man in the postpartum ward,
yes.
Which I'm pretty sure you're familiar with, like the same room, right?
Well, we gave birth in the same hospital. So,
mm-hmm.
I know exactly those green chairs. You do what you can.
So get this, and I should have just asked you about it. I didn't know that the chair pulled out even further. So I thought that it was basically just like an upright chair that had an ottoman that pulled out of it. I didn't realize that you pulled again, and it went all the way down into like a bed.
Sure.
So that first
eventually. Oh, see, I figured it out, but we were at the hospital for several hours before our son was born.
Sure.
So I had time to figure that out. Yeah. Whereas it sounds like as soon as you all got to the hospital, like it was go time.
Yeah. So to finish answering the sleep question, you know, it's gotten into a good pattern now. I feel like, you know, my wife and I were able to sleep for probably about a 3 hour stretch, wake up another 3 hour stretch, which is nice. You know, we're I think we're pretty lucky as far as that is concerned. The difficult thing is, and I mentioned this to you earlier in the week, is that I haven't quite gotten the when the baby sleeps, I sleep thing down yet. Because when she goes to sleep, it's sort of like, you know, the wonder is taken away. So now I want to get down to business. So I start focusing on, like, you know, catching up on whatever the news is, or, you know, reading my Twitter feed, or, you know, whatever the case may be, maybe trying to read a book, which let me tell you, that's not happening right now. I think we haven't quite done that yet. As well as we could, maybe, but yeah. Sleep is coming at a bit of a premium. It definitely hit me pretty hard yesterday, which would have been day five. So he's 6 days old today. But going back to the delivery, like you said, my wife's water broke at 8:30 in the morning on a Saturday, which was nice because it meant we were home anyway. And then I ran a couple of errands because we had made the decision that we were just going to proceed business as normal. We didn't want to, you know, jump the gun, go to the hospital too early or anything like that. So, I actually took our car in because there was an airbag recall on our car. And I was like, well, I got to get this fixed before the baby gets here.
Sure. Yeah.
So I took the car in. They were like, it'll be about 2 hours. I came home. We walked to, like, Walgreens to pick up a couple of things. We came back. This is how optimistic we were. We picked up, like, a pint of ice cream because we were like, tonight we'll have a pint of ice cream. And as we're walking home, Jess is like, oh. And I was like, you okay? And she, like, stops walking. She's like, yeah, that one hurt. And I was like, all right, well, let's get home. The car was ready. I got the text for the car. I was like, I'll go get the car. I'll come right back. We'll figure things out. So we get home. I get the car. I come back. I walk in, and she had decided to take a shower, and I hear noises. And I'm just like, okay, this is what the midwives had talked about. You know, it's like, I know that noise. And I'm like, I think we better go to the hospital. She's like, not yet. And I'm like, okay. And then about an hour later, we went, so it was about 4:30 in the afternoon. We got to the hospital. And then, yeah, the baby was born at 6:14. So it's like not even an hour and 45 minutes after we got to the hospital.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I just love, like, because you told me a little bit of this when I stopped by the hospital as you were checking out, but she was technically in labor. Her water had broken, and she went out of the house. It sounds like you went shopping for a little bit.
Yeah.
That is, wow. Because, I mean, our experience was Betsy's water broke at, like, 5:30 in the evening. I was at work. I came home from work. And then we hung around the house until it was time to go to the hospital. It was like 5-6 o'clock.
Yeah.
The next morning, it was, and for us, it wasn't even the fact that she was going into labor. Her labor was actually very slow. Like, they ended up having to induce because her contractions were very weak. You guys had a really fast experience.
Yeah, and it's, you know, one of the things that I know that had a pretty big impact on Jessica is that the contractions for most of the day were almost so subtle that she didn't, there were a couple of times when she would look at me and she'd be like, no, that wasn't one. I was like, no, I think that was a contraction, you know, and they changed so quickly. They went from being like these things that she was just sort of like, that's it, to being like, oh, okay, this hurts. So I feel like based on what, you know, like the prenatal classes that we took and, the midwives and that sort of thing, everything that we had heard, in the pregnancy group that we were a part of, is that a lot of times they're going to get to a point where they hurt, you know, they hurt like hell, obviously. I mean, I can't speak from experience, but just based on, you know, what Jessica was saying, how she was. And but you can kind of almost, you almost get the opportunity to sort of ease into them. Like, it's a gradual sort of, you know, there's like a continuum of the pain. Whereas with Jessica, it felt like it just leapt a few of those levels and went straight from being kind of like, yeah, this is nothing, to being like, oh my God, this is the worst thing I've ever felt in my life. And so I think that that had a huge impact on her ability, you know, in the delivery room, to push and to, you know, to have any kind of focus whatsoever. But, you know, the amazing thing is she, you know, there were no drugs, everything was natural. She really kind of fought through it and got to a point where it was just sort of like, I don't know, it was like she just took over, Mother Nature took over, whatever you will, and things started to proceed. Now, unfortunately, the cord had ended up wrapping around Hattie's neck. So she was in distress, and they were having trouble, you know, getting Jessica to be able to push her out. And and the midwife looked at us, and she was like, okay, look, I think we could do this in one or two more rounds of pushing, but I'm worried about the baby's heart rate, so I want to call an obstetrician and see what he says. And he came in, and thank goodness for the midwives, because they gave us so much information beforehand, and grabbed the little suction cup thing, which I had seen before and felt before, had in my hand, had even, like, you know, suctioned on my hand with it. So it's like I knew what that tool was, and I think I derived some comfort, because if I had just seen him, like, walk in, take this thing out, and, like, just, you know, snap it on my baby's head, I would have been like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. But he was so good, and literally just, it ended up being, like, over in an instant, and then the baby was out, and she was fine, and skin to skin with mom. And like I said, I think Jessica was in a little shock, just because of the, you know, how everything had happened. But it was, it was an incredible, incredible moment, to say the least. Yeah, I feel like I'm talking too much, but, you know, whatever.
No. Yeah. No, so we, so I told you about our experience when the other day, but we used the midwives at the same hospital. Mm-hmm. But we were in a situation where none of the midwives that we had worked with throughout the pregnancy was actually there, because they do this once a year retreat that they all go on, and they find it very important to not leave anyone behind, because that's how they build, like, team cohesiveness, is to have everyone go. Yeah. So we had a substitute midwife. And when we were at that appointment, when we were told this, Betsy was like, damn it, like, that's going to be the week that I give birth. And sure enough, and sure enough, that was the week. And the midwife was, she was nice enough, but we hadn't established that relationship with her. And there were just some things that happened during the labor that Betsy wasn't really crazy about. And to sum up this midwife in a weird way, is, you know, we got the sheet of paper at the appointment saying, like, you know, these are, like, the two possible substitutes you may have if you give birth during this week. And this woman's headshot, if she were an actor, or if she were appearing in a movie where she was a midwife, her picture looks like the midwife who is looking out for you, but then you find out she's actually out to kill you.
Oh my God.
that's what her headshot looked like. And so we had issue. I don't think the cord was wrapped around Harrison's neck, because they didn't say that, but there was something going on. The labor was causing him distress as well, so his heart rate dropped anytime Betsy pushed.
Yeah.
And
which to be fair is supposed to happen.
Sure.
But there's a threshold where it gets to be, you know, like, we don't want it to go below this.
Yeah. So it got scary there a few times. And luckily, by this point, Betsy was far enough out of it that she didn't realize how serious that it was.
Yep.
But it did get to a point where they did have to put an oxygen mask on her, just so that Harrison could get more.
Same with Jessica.
And there was a moment where, I'm sure it was very similar to your room, like, our delivery room was kind of, like, L-shaped. And there was one moment where I had to step around the corner out of sight from Betsy to just freak out for 5 seconds.
Yeah.
So that she couldn't see it.
Yeah.
And then come back around and pretend everything was okay. And then they didn't have to do the suction cup or anything to get him to come out. And so when he did come out, either he wasn't breathing or he wasn't breathing enough, like they were kind of scared. So, like, the midwife, she was just very quick and very thorough. Like, she's like, she handed me the scissors. She presented the cord. She's like, here, cut here. I cut there. And they immediately whisked him away to the warming table. And then they got him going. And within a few seconds, he was fine.
Yeah.
But for about 5 seconds, it was really scary for me.
Yeah.
But like I said, luckily, Betsy was so out of it. Like, she didn't fully realize how tense it was in that moment until later on.
Yeah, you know, it sounds like we had, you know, kind of similar experiences in a lot of ways, in spite of the speed, you know, of our labor and delivery. Because I know that, yeah, like I said, Jess was fairly out of it there for a minute. They had to give her the oxygen mask as well because the baby's heart rate and oxygen levels were dipping too low. The biggest difference, I think, is once she was out, they were able to, you know, kind of warm her up with a blanket and put her directly onto Jessica, like, right away. Like, right away, which was fantastic. Sure. The nurse actually looked at me as she was doing all of this, and she's like, I'm just trying to get your baby to cry. And I was like, no, of course, I got it. And she's like, where's your camera? And I was like, huh? And she's like, you're missing it. You should be taking all these pictures. And it was so funny because I, like, on one hand, I'm like, yes, of course, I should be taking pictures. On the other hand, it was just sort of like, I'm just taking it in.
You know? No, yeah.
Like, I'm just taking it in.
Yeah.
But I'm thankful, honestly, that I got some of those pictures because I genuinely feel like I was able to be in the moment for that important part where she, you know, she's out into the world. She's, you know, they put her on Jessica's chest, and then I was able to just kind of start taking some pictures real quick and be done with it, as opposed to being one of those people. Not that there's anything wrong with this, but I think just for me personally, it wouldn't have worked having, like, the camera out the whole time. Do you know what I mean? Like, I couldn't have done that. I wouldn't have wanted to do that.
No, I don't know if you discussed this at all. Like, Betsy and I, like, we even discussed, it was like no updates, no nothing, no. Like, even if we weren't posting it right away, she didn't want, like, any pictures taken. The first picture that we took after was after they, you know, they got him, you know, breathing and crying, warmed up, and, like, you know, they weighed him and, like, they held him up in front of the thing that, like,
yeah,
the measure is high. And so, like, holding him up, like, that was the first picture. And then we took, like, you know, like, the first picture of, like, him breastfeeding and things like that. But Yeah, like you know, I am as addicted to my phone and taking pictures and capturing moments as well as anyone. If you're friends with me on Facebook and all the videos and pictures of Harrison, you know that.
Right.
But like in that moment, I had absolutely no desire to be doing that because,
I mean,
just the very act of doing that, it takes you out of the moment for a little bit.
And
I just wanted to be fully present there in that moment, you know, especially everything considered, like heart rate and breathing and everything that was going on when he first came out.
Sure. And there were a couple of things that happened right away. I mean, they let Jess have skin to skin for quite a while, and they sort of did things around her and the baby as opposed to doing them to her and the baby, if that makes sense. And I got to cut the cord just like you. Then after a time, I don't know exactly how long, it felt like it was a little while, honestly. It could have been upwards of half an hour. They did take Hattie over, and they, you know, they weighed her, they, you know, did the vaccines, they put the, you know, erythromycin on her eyes, you know, all that sort of stuff, and then gave her back to Jess. In the meantime, they were also giving Jess a couple of shots, because it turned out that the baby was born Coombs positive, which I don't know if you know about this, but basically it's when the mother's blood mixes with the baby's blood in the cord. And, you know, I don't know what the percentages are on this or anything, but from what I gather, most of the time that's not a big deal, but it is when they have different or incompatible blood types, which is kind of fascinating in a way when you think about it. But Jessica's O positive, the baby ended up being A negative, so the blood type, you know, didn't mix, and it caused a couple of issues just very early on. Nothing, you know, that would cause any kind of, like, long-term effects or developmental issues or anything like that, just more like, we need to watch this in case, or stuff like that. So they gave Jess a shot, because the interesting about this is that the shot that they gave her would prevent that from ever having an effect should we have any other kids. So even if the same thing happened on baby, like, number two, if we were to have another baby, it wouldn't matter because they gave her this shot. It's fascinating. And I don't know enough about it other than to know that that's the case. And I was just like, oh my God, there's so much going on. And it's hard to, you know, to really kind of take in and appreciate some of those things in the moment. But then after the fact, it's like, wow, that, because I was reading about it and I was like, they did that. You know, it's like that happened.
Yeah. Now I want to go back and talk to Betsy, because I know that there was something during one of the midwife sessions where there was some discussion about blood type. There was a little bit of worry, some discussion. I think it had something to do with like being like positive or negative or something. I don't know. I want to go back and talk to her about that. But all of that is just fascinating.
Yeah.
But you said there were a couple of things, like they had to keep an extra eye on her for the first couple of days.
So she, we knew she was going to be small. We had a late term ultrasound just because Jessica had lost weight. And at that point, you know, in a pregnancy, you're supposed to either be gaining or maintaining weight. So they were curious to see if she'd lost any fluid. They did the ultrasound. That was not the case at all. But they could tell that the baby was kind of on the small side. But everything was fine. You know, developmentally speaking, like, you know, she had 10 fingers and toes. The heart looked great. The brain looked great. You know, everything was fine. It's just like she's just smaller. So when she was born, in addition to Coombs positive, she was 5 pounds, 13 ounces, which doesn't sound, you know, too crazy. That said, she was also 10 days late. So in addition to being small, she had extra time, you know, to grow. So they were a little concerned there. They checked her blood sugar. Her blood sugar was a little low. Along with the Coombs positive thing, one of the effects of that is that it can have an impact on the baby's bilirubin, which can lead to jaundice, which, you know, if left unchecked, can lead to like brain damage and that sort of thing. We were told that her level was like a 2 when she was born, so they wanted to keep an eye on it, and it rose to a 7 the next day. This freaked me out because I didn't know what they were talking about, and the night nurse that we had that first night was not the friendliest. Her bedside manner wasn't that great, and so I like...
We were talking about this. I think, yeah, we had an experience with another nurse. I wonder if it was the same nurse.
Yeah.
Just rub this the wrong way at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Right? Yeah, it's like, yeah. I just became a dad. This is not the time. But we later found out, because our midwife came to visit us, and she was so awesome, and she came in and spent time with us, even though it was like 11 o'clock at night, and she was, at that point, I think she'd been on since like 8 o'clock in the morning, and it had been such a busy weekend. To give you an idea of how busy it was, 3 other people in our midwife group that we were a part of delivered that weekend. So 2 delivered on the same day as Jessica, and 1 delivered the day after. So 4 out of this group of like 9 women delivered in the span of 24 hours.
Damn.
So it was a pretty crazy weekend. Anyway, she came in. She let us know that they don't really start to worry until that number hits like 13 or 14. And when she said that, I was like, okay, it's fine. But one of the things that they ended up doing is putting her under a special light, which, because I guess the sun in particular, like UV rays, help to break down the bilirubin in the body, and they pass it through like their bowel movements. So this light simulates that, and they put her under there. And the biggest drawback to this is that we couldn't really handle her except to feed her. So that's when, honestly, as silly as it might sound, changing her diaper, which at that early stage doesn't happen quite as often as it does now, was like my thing. Like I needed that touch with her in order to actually have a moment, because otherwise I knew that I wasn't going to be able to, you know, other than giving her to Jessica to breastfeed, I wasn't going to be able to do those things.
Sure. So I can't remember, we've talked about this before. Before Hattie was born, have you changed a diaper before?
Yes, I had, actually, yeah.
Okay, because I had never changed a diaper at all.
Okay.
I have a couple of nephews, I have a niece, but it was just like, you know, I don't get home to visit very often, and when I was, like, I was never entrusted or ever asked or ever volunteered, frankly, to change a diaper. So that was something that I had a little bit of anxiety over, but it's like, yeah, you learn very quickly.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that was difficult for me, so the Billy lights, that's what they call them, because of the quality of the light, she had to wear like a blindfold, basically, so that they wouldn't affect her eyes.
Sure.
And this thing was just so impossible to put on, and I struggled putting it on her, and part of that was because, as I'm sure you can understand, early on with Harrison, you probably felt the same way. You're afraid that they're so delicate that you can't, like you can't be too rough or apply too much pressure.
Oh yeah.
And the nurse, one of the nurses came in, and she was wonderful, and she was like, and she's, and the way she said it, I feel like had her tone of voice been any different, it would have felt condescending and judgmental. But what she said, and I won't do the way she said it justice, but just know it was so nurturing and kind. She said, well, you're a first time dad, and you think you're going to break her because she's just so gentle, and she is, but you can do this. And it was like, it was so reaffirming in a way that I knew that I could do this and I wasn't going to hurt her. It still sucked. I hated putting that thing on her.
Sure. Yeah, that's awesome. And we said before, because, you know, giving birth at the same hospital, like simultaneously, whenever any of the nurses who were all women, I'm sure it sounds like you had the same experience.
Yeah.
On one hand, I was, you know, treated like I didn't know what I was doing because I was the dad. I was the man.
Sure.
But on the other hand, I was also made to feel like I was dad of the year, just for being present. Like, you know, other than like maybe go down and get food or something, like I didn't leave Betsy's side.
Yeah.
The entire 2 days after she gave birth, and right. It kind of made me wonder if sometimes, you know, how often do these nurses, do they see situations where the dad can't be there the entire time, or the dad isn't there the entire time? Like, we took the similar, like, prenatal classes that you took, and I remember there was one session that we went to where the father wasn't there, and so we had all these couples, and then you just had like one woman like sitting there trying to learn all this information by herself.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, during one of the breaks, Betsy and I accidentally like overheard her telephone conversation. I assume it was with the dad, but basically saying, like, it really sucks that you're not here. I wish that you were here. It just makes me feel like, you know, really grateful that we're in a situation where I could be there.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and this is, I say this with no judgment whatsoever, but four of the women that were in our centering group, you know, their partners or their husbands were never there. Now, I will say that for three of them, I'm pretty sure, yeah, three of them, it was like their second or their third child. So there was probably an element of kind of like, okay. And let me just explain very briefly, the way that we had our appointments with the midwives, it was called centering. And the idea is that you're in there with other couples that have a similar due date to you. So it's almost like a round table kind of thing, which was really, really beneficial. And it was long. It was 2 hours, whereas a regular appointment might only be like 10 or 15 minutes. But I feel like doing that exposed us to so many things that we would not necessarily have been able to cover in a routine appointment, because other people were asking questions, other people were bringing things up. And you end up, I don't know, there were moments where, I know for me personally, it wasn't even about the pregnancy or Jessica or the baby, where we just got to kind of express ourselves, and it was very helpful. It was very, very helpful to me, and I loved doing it, and I don't know if we would do it again for a second child, but I mean, for a first-time parent, like, I think it was invaluable in a lot of ways.
Sure. We did, because it sounds like you went to several classes that were 2 to 3 hours in length.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We did, I don't know, maybe you call it like the accelerated course, where we just went
totally.
to two all-day
events.
So we had kind of a different experience in that. So I think in that, like, we didn't get a whole lot of time to like, really bond or get to know the other parents in the group. It was just, like, you know, very informational in there. May have a little bit of chit-chat with other people, but
yeah,
you're just like, you're trying to soak in all of this information. Yeah. And of course, like, there's the one day where, you know, you go through all these exercises of, like, different positions to get in to comfort your partner while she's giving birth. Yes. And, like, Betsy and I did it, and we went through the motions, but we're like, yeah, when it comes game time, like, this is all going to go out the window. And sure enough, when it became game time, it was all...
There were two, you know, it's funny that you say that, though. There were two that we ended up remembering, and I think it was because they felt good to Jessica, like, just in general. So she kind of figured, like, remember those, because I just like the way they feel, so maybe they'll help. One was the hip squeeze, where you basically put, like, kind of the palm of your hand, like, right yeah. above the mm-hmm. hip bone, and you squeeze in towards the center. Mm-hmm. And then the other one... I mean, you as a massage therapist are probably familiar with some of these things just in general, but the other one is, like... right at the base of the spine, you kind of sure. put your palm and push, like, kind of in and up a little bit, I think.
Yeah. I'm going to say, yeah, we did a lot of that during labor.
Yeah.
And even, like, actually, like, the last 2 or 3 weeks of her pregnancy, we would just get into bed at night, and I would either put a hand or I would just put a knee in her back, and she would just, like, push up against me for a couple of minutes before we ended up separating to go to sleep.
Yeah. It's funny, because I'm always curious just to, you know, people's bodies are just different because Jessica ended up carrying like a lot of her tension or needing the most relief kind of like under her shoulders or around her neck, kind of that area. And I was always surprised because I always expected that it would be like her lower back, you know, mm-hmm. it's like, I mean, it's weird carrying all this extra weight and all this sort of stuff. But she said her lower back really didn't bother her that much until maybe the last week of pregnancy or last few days before sure. the baby came. And I think that was because she was kind of starting to have those very early contractions. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's incredible. I mean, it's one of those things that I say with all humility and appreciation, you know, we will never experience or know that. And,
we got to be, ringside. I don't know if that's the right term. Next, I mean, there's because you know, we had like several hours of labor on our end, and at one point, I looked at Betsy, and I've done 2 Chicago marathons, and I looked at her and I said, "I never get to brag about doing a marathon again, do I?" She's like, "No, nope. No, you don't." Nice. And another experience that we had with our labor is that, you know, since we did several hours, like we got like. What felt like at the time just like really close with not one but 2 nurses.
Oh,
because
sure, okay.
there was a shift change.
Yeah.
And like especially the second nurse, because she was in it with us for longer, and like, you know, like in that time I'm just like, you are awesome, we're gonna get you a great gift, we're gonna get you a card, we're gonna take you out to lunch afterwards, you know you're amazing being here during yeah. this time. And then of course the birth happens and shift changes and everybody goes their separate ways, and never saw or heard from those nurses again, but they
sure.
were in the moment, they were absolutely so amazing. I always like to use the metaphor of the Losers Club coming together to defeat the monster
yes.
in It, and how quickly they forget about each other
yeah
afterwards yeah. I use that metaphor for, you know, coming together, like putting together a show, and then right. how quickly you disband afterwards. And it was very much like that. It's like everybody's come together, we're putting on a show, the birth happens, and then, you know, we go on and we're new parents, and then, you know, life goes on for them. Like, it's just another day for them, and yeah. they're going on to the next thing. And yeah.
Well, you almost feel like when, you know, using the show metaphor, you become a family. And,
oh, God.
And you know, you're that close with those people for those 6 to 8 weeks or more, depending on the show or the run of the show. And with this, you don't necessarily become a family, but lives depend on the relationships they get formed in there. And so it does create a bond that is similar to and yet completely unique. To the point, like I said, when we saw our midwife, she didn't actually deliver the thing about one of the things that the midwife said is like, we don't deliver babies. You know, you're the one doing the pushing. You're the one doing the work. We're just there to catch.
Okay. That's awesome.
So,
yeah.
So our regular midwife wasn't actually on the day that we went in. However, the midwife that was actually the woman that we had our first appointment with, oddly enough, just because the way things worked out. And when our midwife did come in to check on us, there was something almost familial about it. And there was something almost validating. Like, the whole experience couldn't really be real until she was there to sort of look at the baby, to talk to us, to answer questions, to, you know, to spend some time with us. And it was really, it was very important and very, very cool, you know. And the past few days, man, have been... I try to, you know, I try to stay away from cliche in my day-to-day life because I don't want to be cliche. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, I never knew that I could feel this way. And I look at Jessica in a very different light. You know, she was so strong. She was just a warrior in there and really got thrown a curveball because I don't think it was the labor she expected. And I know some dads and partners struggle with connecting with the baby at first. And I can genuinely say that was never even an issue. You know, as soon as I saw her, as soon as I held her, it's just like you can't really put it into words.
Sure.
And I mean, she has become my world, and I think that, you know, Jess is just everything, and I'm happy to say that I can spend, you know, the next 8 or 9 days at home, mm-hmm. and just be here with them and not have to worry about anything else.
That's awesome. Yeah. No, and it's so, yeah, because I wrote up my journal, my blog afterwards. It's because people always want to, like, you hear parents say, or you hear people say, like, you know, you end up loving your child more than your spouse or your partner. And it's not loving them more or less. It's a very different kind of love that overwhelms you, because before your child is born, at least in our situation, like you didn't have a context to put it in before, right. You know, like, even if you're in a situation where, you know, where you helped raise a relative or a younger sibling as a parent because of family circumstances, like, even still, like, you don't have the same context. You don't have anything else to compare it to.
Yeah.
Other than be the parent.
Cause what I've always felt like, and I remember very early on in our relationship, you know, I told Jessica, this is kind of how I felt when it comes to a significant other. I think there are different kinds, sure, but for me, I think that the love that you have with that person is grown, and it changes, and it's almost, not almost, I believe it is, it's a choice. It's like, I choose to love you, and I grow with you, and that love grows with you. And it evolves, and it changes, and it becomes more and more and more. With Hattie, when my daughter was born, there was no choice, you know? Mm-hmm. And I mean that in the most positive of ways. It's mm-hmm. like, I love you. Mm-hmm. I love you completely. I love you eternally. Like, I am done. I am yours. There is no question about this. Mm-hmm. And again, I agree with you. It's not a case of loving the child more than the spouse. God forbid. You know, I'm not even a religious guy, and I just said God forbid.
Sure, yeah.
but it is a different thing. It's a very different thing. And, you know, I told Jessica, I it was either the day we got home from the hospital or the day after. And, you know, hell, I feel like the only way to do this type of discussion that we're having right now for the podcast is to be completely naked. So, not literally, I'm wearing clothes. But I looked at Jessica and I just said, I love you more today than I did yesterday. And I didn't think that was possible. Mm-hmm. And we both kind of broke down and just kind of shared, you know, a few sort of happy tears. And then we looked at our daughter and are just like, I don't see how it's going to get better than this.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah.
You need, because the first few months, they are going to be so difficult with lack of sleep and challenges and running to the emergency room in the middle of the night because you think that's what you got to do.
Yeah, you
got to take, you know, those moments like that and bank all of those, and that's what's going to get you through. And I can't remember because it's all a blur for me now. I definitely felt the same way about Betsy afterwards. I don't know if I came right out and expressed that feeling of just like, you know, like I thought I couldn't love her more, but then after like seeing her go through what she did with the labor, and she was like in hard, painful labor because they had to induce with Pitocin, and so the Pitocin contractions.
Because they knock out the body's natural painkillers. Because whereas normally oxytocin, which is what the body's producing at that time, that the Pitocin imitates, like, you know, that it balances itself out and in this wonderful way where your body kind of naturally relieves some of that pain. But Pitocin doesn't come with any of that benefits. It just causes the contractions to come, but it doesn't give you any of those natural pain relievers.
Painkillers, yeah. And so, like watching her, you know, go through that. I think she threw up twice during the thing, you know. You know, so it was the first time I had ever seen, you know, my wife vomit. So, you know, and just like watching her. It was amazing, awesome, and wonderful. And, you know, we're in a year and a half ahead of time from you guys, but it's like, you know, there's sometimes we just look at Harrison and we're just like, you know, we did that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. It's wonderful. I mean, we had one of those moments like last night, just sitting out on our back porch after we went to bed, and we had the baby monitor out there, you know, back with us, you know, just, you know, sitting there drinking our wine and our whiskey for the night, and just like, you know, looking at him on the monitor and just being like, you know, we did that, this thing. And also, like, especially now, especially in the last 2 or 3 months, like, he is starting to say like little words, and he's saying phrases that even though they don't make sense to us, you can tell, like, in his head, he's making sense. Mm-hmm. Like, he is providing complete thoughts. So just watching him slowly develop into a person, it's just, it's just, it's just amazing.
Yeah, it's the whole journey feels like something. I told Jess when she was in labor, because like what you're talking about, how it got to be hard. I mean, there were a couple of moments where it just seemed like it was the worst thing she'd ever been through. And I just looked at her and I was like, look, this might be the hardest thing. I don't think I said might be. I was like, this will be the hardest thing you ever do, but it just might be the most important thing you ever do. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that helped or not. This is what I said.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now
you're delirious at the moment. You can't be, right. They can't all be motivational nuggets.
Yeah. And now after the fact, it's like, you know, like you kind of say, like looking at her, there's this sort of this sense of like, wow, we did this. And it's only the beginning.
Yeah.
So
there's that.
Yeah.
So to shift gears a little bit, because I know up until she was born, your shorthand for her just with friends and family was Pamplemousse. Was that it?
Pamplemousse, yeah.
Pamplemousse. So how did you come to her name?
So first of all, the Pamplemousse obviously is a nod to the French word for grapefruit, which is only because we drink LaCroix.
Sure.
And so I just was calling her that for whatever word. I like the sound of the word. We went through a phase where we were like kind of trying to find names that were a little different or that meant something to us. And at one point, we really liked Dylan Harper, like Bob Dylan, Harper Lee. Like Dylan Harper was really something we loved. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And this past January, we were kind of keeping the name close to our vest, but we went out with her sister, my sister-in-law, and her boyfriend, and the three of us, because Jessica is amazing and didn't mind, had a lot to drink. So we got back to the condo, and we were talking, and they asked, and Jess was like, yeah, fine, why not, you know, even though she was the sober one, she was like, you can tell them. So I was like, you know, the name that we really like right now is Dylan Harper. The next day, Jessica got a text message from her sister saying, Alex, that's her boyfriend, says that you should Google Dylan Harper because you might want to know before you decide. I was like, what? She Googles it. And it turns out that there is an adult film star whose name is like Dylan Harper, spelled differently, but still. So you're like, well, that one's out. And then a few months later, I went through it. I went through a moment where I was like, let's look for like old Hollywood names. And I'm looking at some of the old Hollywood names. We thought Vivian was really nice, like Vivian Leigh. And we thought maybe Vivian Harper would be great. And, you know, it was like, maybe we were on the fence. And then one day, I just was like, Hattie, I like Hattie. And I mentioned it to her. She's like, maybe. And then the next day she sent me a text message at work. And she's like, what was that name you said last night? And I was like, Hattie. And I was like, Hattie Mae. And she was like, M-A-E, right? And I was like, yeah, M-A-E, not M-A-Y. And it just stuck. And there's really, you know, I wish that there was like some sort of grand story or some sort of, but there was no rhyme or reason. You know, it just kind of came. Okay. And it felt right.
Yeah. So I was wondering, like, because Hattie, it sounds like it wants to be short for something.
Yes. I believe it's Henrietta, if I'm not mistaken.
But it sounds like her name is not Henrietta, like officially, it's just Hattie.
Yes, exactly. That is exactly correct.
So it's like that episode of Quantum Leap where Sam leaps into Jake, not short for Jacob. Just plain Jake.
Yes, actually, I'm sorry. So Harriet. Harriet was actually a form of Henriette. It comes from that. The meaning behind Henriette or Henry or Harriet is home power. Hera, I think, is where it comes from, like the Greek goddess.
Sure.
To us, she's just Hattie, and it's Hattie. There's no, it's not short for anything.
That's awesome. Because I don't know if I ever told you this, but for a long time, Harrison was going to be Henry.
Mm.
Because Henry is the name of the time traveler and the time traveler's wife.
Yeah.
I just have a very strong emotional connection with that story. I mean, actually, what I recorded today was like another episode of this podcast, and maybe if not the first episode, like one of the first episodes, just talking about like a pivotal scene in that book and how that informs, what I think about, like when I, forming a relationship with Harrison, But anyway, so yeah, for a long time it was going to be Henry, to the point that we were calling him like Little H. Like that was the name that we referred with everyone. But then I started seeing Henry is a name that is becoming very much more commonplace now. And I saw like how many other names. And the breaker was that when a coworker of mine at the massage clinic that I worked at the time, after I realized that his son's name was Henry, and him and I look similar enough that sometimes our clients get us mixed up with each other.
Oh, man.
That's why I was like, I don't know if we can do Henry.
Yeah.
But by that point, we've been calling him Little H for so long, we just decided to stick with another H name. And then Harrison came up somewhere. It's not Harrison Ford, although like people like to remind us that Harrison Ford was actually born at the hospital where we delivered Harrison. and so people thought it was that. And so it's kind of the same thing. It just kind of popped in. There's no significance to it. Harrison literally means Harrison's or Harry's son.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no connection there. And then the middle name Cash, it came from.
Right.
We knew that we wanted a monosyllabic middle name just because mm-hmm. of the last, like Harrison Freimeyer. We wanted the middle name to be one syllable. And then one night, we were listening to music, drinking whiskey, I think. Because this was the point in the pregnancy where, like, where the midwife said, have a drink,
Right.
And so, like, we're just having we're having a drink, and we're listening to old country music. And I think it was Burning Ring of Fire came on, and Harrison just started dancing in mom's belly. And we looked at each other, and almost simultaneously, we said cash to each other. We weren't absolutely sure about it. We had a backup name ready just in case. Sure. But then the first time he was breastfeeding, I looked down, and one of his hands resting on her chest looked like it was giving me the finger. And we're like, yep, that's it. Yeah, he is Harrison Cash. So if he ever wants to be a country singer, he's just got to drop the last name. And he's good to go.
And he's good to go. I love it. I think it's an awesome name. I really do. Yeah, it's so strange. Harper was a name that I really, really liked. Mm-hmm. But it is very popular right now. Yeah. And so I knew right away that that would not be her first name. So we were kind of gunning for maybe like a middle name. But it just didn't, you know, it just didn't work out. And that's fine. You know what I mean? Like, I think kind of similar to what you said about Harrison, I'm almost glad that it's not a name with a lot of meaning behind it because it's hers. Uh-huh. You know, it's not a case of like, well, you were named after Bob Dylan and Harper Lee. You know, it's like, that's cool. Like, yeah. I still think that's kind of a badass name. But at the same time, it's just going to be kind of nice. But you're Hattie. You know, you are Hattie.
Yeah, that's yours. That's your name. Yeah. But even still, even with like Harrison Cash, like, I texted my teenage nephew, and he's very much, he is a sweet young man, but he's also reached that point in his teenage years where he's just sarcastic and sardonic about everything. And so I text him a name, and he just texted back, and he's like, so you named your kid after Harrison Ford and Johnny Cash. And I could just hear that in his deadpan voice. And I'm like, no, like, I could see where you get that. No, but okay.
Yeah.
It is
strange, you know, and I think for me, you know, I'm kind of lucky because my name being Samuel, you know, there was no one that I was really named after. It was just like, I like this name, you know, that my parents happened to like it. And it's funny thinking about like the iterations that my name went through, because I know at one point I think William was a name that they had in mind. But they hated the idea of me being called Bill or Billy or anything like that. Sure. I think they were okay. They were okay with, you know, with Liam, which is also a nickname for William. Mm-hmm. But you know, nothing else. No Will or Willie or whatever.
Sure.
I think it was my grandfather that ended up giving them the suggestion of Samuel. I don't know. Names are interesting as all hell.
Because they are. Yeah. I ended up being named after a friend of my dad's who was the first person from our county to die in Vietnam.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay.
To the point, when I went to D.C. a few years ago, I actually went to the wall and found his name.
Did you tell me this before?
On the wall, yeah. And at one point, like, because they have these things where you can, like, put a piece of paper over the name and, like, do a stencil where you can draw it. Dennis Ray O'Neill. Yeah. But they had also, like, thrown out, like, David Michael, which I don't think had any kind of it didn't have any sort of significance. My dad, he also threw out he wanted to name me Ulysses Abraham.
Oh, my God. Wow. Wow.
That way he could call me Useless Abe for short.
Oh, jeez.
Luckily, that did not stick.
Yeah.
Yeah. But names are so interesting. You know, we talked about your lack of sleep earlier.
Yeah.
Have you done just anything like completely delirious, sleep deprived?
I guess the one thing is I was looking for my keys earlier today, and they were literally hanging on the rack right in front of my face.
Yeah.
I was convinced, I think in my mind, I saw them kind of out of the corner of my eye, and I was convinced that they were Jess's keys, which look different, to say the least, than my keys, but that's what I was sure of. The other thing that I find myself doing a lot is, even like right now, for instance, being sort of at a loss for words sometimes, I'm, you know, in the middle of the night. Right now, she's kind of in a bit of a cycle. if you can call it that. I mean, she's 6 days old, where she sleeps a lot from about 3 o'clock in the afternoon until about 8 o'clock at night. So she'll sleep for like 2.5 hours, feed, then go straight to sleep for another 2.5 hours. And then she's usually up from about like 8:30 till 4-ish, like every 90 minutes or so. Mm-hmm. And during that time, you know, we've been falling asleep around 9:30, 10 o'clock. And when we have to get up, it definitely, like, there's a boat, I'm up. And then 5 minutes later, I'm actually getting out of bed.
Sure,
to,
yeah.
To do whatever it is I needed to do.
Yeah, I mean, we had those nights where, like, literally, like, we got no sleep. None at all. And like, I remember, like, there were some mornings of just, like, the alarm clock went off in the morning. And I was like, to get through this day, like, I have to pretend like I slept last night. And I have to get up and I have to pretend everything is normal. So I'm going to get up. I'm going to make coffee. Yeah. And I'm going to go to work. Like, it, yeah.
Yeah.
And you really... You really learn how to compartmentalize at the time.
You know, I got to be honest with you. I was a little scared. But one of the things that I was a little scared about was that lack of sleep. Like, to the point where it's like, can I do that? Can I, like, am I physically capable of doing that? And it's been kind of amazing. I think... You know, it's definitely hit Jess harder for two reasons. One, I feel like she's getting a little bit less sleep than I am. And two, the act, you know, I'm sure you know this. I don't know how many people listening know this. So I would assume a fair amount. But the act of breastfeeding is a workout. Like, the amount of calories that are burned during that act are comparable to, like, you know, running 5 miles. It's insane. I have no idea that you could, like, burn so many calories, you know, just by breastfeeding. So that in itself is exhausting. And so, you put those things together. And, I mean, I think that she has had a couple of moments where she's been like, I am exhausted. But even right now, it's like, I'm tired for sure. But I'm not rushing for bed. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're recording this right now.
Right.
Yeah. You. God. Yeah. You just get used to it. The thing is, like, looking back now, like, a lot of it is so much a blur. You know, like, I had to, like, talk about, like, you know, delirious things you do. Like, I had one morning. I may have told you this story before. I sat down and made breakfast, and everybody else was still in bed, and I was reading the news on my phone. And I decided I wanted to put my calories into the calorie counting app that I use. And so I put my phone down and I went looking for my phone.
Yeah.
I backtracked to the kitchen, the bathroom. I snuck back into the bedroom because Harrison was co-sleeping with us. I couldn't find it. And I was like, ah, screw it. I'll put my calories in later. I'm just going to finish reading the news. And then I picked my phone back up and I went back to reading the news. And then about 10 seconds later, I was like, oh. My phone's right here.
Oh, man. It's funny because you've told me that story a couple of times before, I think.
Okay.
And you know, it was always like, oh, my gosh, that's crazy sort of story. Now it's like, I get that. Like, I could totally see myself doing that. I haven't quite gotten there yet, but, like, I could see myself doing that.
Sure.
God, I guess that's not true. I had a similar experience just the other day. I was like doing something on my phone, and I was like, where's my phone? And I'm like, you idiot, it's right in your hand.
Yeah.
So I didn't necessarily go through everything that you went through, but I did have that similar moment of just sort of like, oh, I need to call my dad or something like that.
Sure.
And I was like, I need to go get my phone. Where's my phone? Where's my phone? Right.
Yeah. Yeah. To be honest, yeah, I've had those moments since then.
Sure.
You'll say, yeah, we'll probably should start wrapping up here pretty soon. But I'll say another thing. It's like, you know, you say, like, Hattie's going through a cycle right now, but what's a cycle? She's only 6 days old.
Yeah.
It's like you will have that, like you will go through things where you think you have it figured out. Like, oh, like she's having difficulty like getting to sleep or having difficulty getting it down. This is a trick that'll work. It'll work for 2 or 3 days and then it'll switch up. And this is something that I posted on Facebook probably when like Harrison was like 6 months old, like on Star Trek The Next Generation, like every episode where they encounter the Borg.
Yeah.
There's always this moment of reckoning where they're firing phasers and they figured out how to shift the phaser range so that the Borg don't adapt as quickly. And then finally the little pops up and someone ominously says they've adapted.
Yeah.
And all bets are off. And that's what it's like trying to figure out what makes your baby fall asleep.
Right.
Or calm them down when they're fussy. It's like, you think you got it? You think you got it? Ah, crap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're, I mean, you know, we're definitely in that phase right now where, I mean, again, we're literally 6 days at it. It's almost unbelievable. We're the only thing that she requires to make her happy is to be fed. So
that, so will,
like, you know, anything else is fine. Like, she'll play along with some of that stuff because she's fairly alert. Because that's the other thing, you know, it's interesting because she was born 10 days late. There's this wonderful app that we started using called the Wonder Weeks.
Yep. Same one.
And it's fascinating because it asks you for the due date, not the date they were born, but yep. The due date, because that's what they use to calculate development. Because, again, as I'm sure most people know, the baby is developing in the womb past that due date. So there are things that she does at 6 days old that a baby that arrived on time at 6 days old would not be doing. You know, she's already started doing the, you know, you put her down for like tummy time and she's turning her head and she's lifting herself up and she can follow things with her eyes. And she, you know, so she's doing some of these things that I feel like had she been born on time, we'd still be waiting for her to do. Which is fascinating. But yeah, we're definitely in that place where all that's pretty much required of us is to feed her and change her diaper, and that keeps her fairly happy. So
you're in that phase. We better start wrapping this up here. We just said we're a half hour. It's the same thing with the Quantum Leap podcast. Everything is just like, yeah, we're going to be a quick episode, and then here we go. Then we just get talking. Suggestion I would make, it popped in my head as we were talking, that I did. If you haven't done it yet, just sit down and journal out. Journal the what labor was like, what the delivery, what that thing was before it flits out of your memory forever.
Yeah.
Just sit down and write that out while you still have the details, because I did that with Harrison, and it's nice to go back and read, and it'll be nice to share with him when he is old enough to read that.
Yeah. Yeah. I had written quite a few letters to her, similar to your blog, honestly.
Sure.
Yeah. I think that might have actually been where I got the impetus to do it. So I have quite a few of those to give to her. And Jessica and I were in the process of potentially setting up an email address for her and then sending her these things via email. And so that one day we'll give her the email address and she can open this stuff, you know, and read it. But I would love to do that. I know Jessica has a journal, for the express purpose. Like, it's literally her mother gave it to her because her mother did the same thing when she was born. And so the express purpose for this journal is to, you know, basically write a book to Hattie. So, I appreciate that. I'm going to follow that advice because it'll be well worth it.
Sure. Awesome. We should wrap this up. We should come back and do this in a couple of months here.
Yeah, man, why not? I'd love to.
Yeah, I wanted to get this get you on tape here to capture this when you're in the throes of the first week and sleep deprivation and all that.
It's awesome. It's incredible. I feel like I've gotten to do some pretty cool things in my life, but this is by far the best one. So
yeah, we're in for a ride. And it's not like, I mean, I'm just a year and a half ahead of you, so I'm figuring everything out. I figured everything out too. Awesome. Well, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. Seriously, I was very flattered to be asked. So thank you.
No, my pleasure. All right.
All right.
Talk to you later.
Thanks.
Hello again, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. It really means a lot to me. If you haven't already, please do subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast from. Also, be sure to check us out at dadtothefuture.com or Dad to the Future, all the words spelled out, on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And on any of those platforms, please do leave a comment. Let me know what you thought. And also interact with the other dads, parents, time travel nerds, and any other listeners as well. Until next week, I'll see you in the future.
America. We are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.